Hello and welcome along to the RTÉ Rugby Podcast, the last podcast before Christmas. We are 1 week away, attention starting to turn from the Champions Cup back to the United Rugby Championship. Last weekend, Leinster maintained their winning start of the season. 9 in a row in all competitions, a 15-7 win over Clermont Auvergne at the Aviva Stadium. They host Connacht on Saturday. They made it back-to-back bonus point wins in the Challenge Cup, beating Perpignan 31-18 in France. On Friday night, though, it is Ulster against Munster and a meeting of two sides that were beaten in the Champions Cup at the weekend and two sides that picked up quite a few injuries along the way. Munster lost 16-14 away to Cast. Ulster losing 40-19 at home to Bordeaux Begle, having led 19-14 with an hour played. Johnny Holland and Bernard Jackman are with me for this afternoon's podcast. And Johnny, I might start with you because you weren't with us on last week's podcast, where we ended up having a conversation to lead off about how the opening round of the Champions Cup hadn't really hit like it normally would. It was kind of the same thing last weekend, and you were writing in your RTÉ.ie column yesterday as well about just that. You know, 4 of the 24 games we've seen so far have been decided or by 7 points or less. It's hard to see where the competition even goes from here, because we've reached a point now where, and we'll get to a little bit later as well, where like we're seeing Munster resting players and rotating their squad around a little bit for a Champions Cup game. And to be totally honest, I don't blame them, and we'll get into more about it later on as well. But when the teams who have been like so loyal to this competition down the years are starting to rotate things around a little bit, that's probably the point where you know things are in trouble.
Yeah, that's it. I think have Munster, you know, rotated purposely before this? I'm not really sure. And I know the talk was that they had a 6-day turnaround and it was all preempted, like, you know, it wasn't forced. And I just think that's a pity. Like, you know, you're talking about a league of champions, like, you know, put it that way. It's not really, when you look at the qualification and how you get into it, it's not really a league of champions, is it? But like,
well, if 80% of the premiership are in the competition, I think
it's kind of gone away from the top teams. Like, and I don't know, I just think it's disappointing. Like, the more I thought about it, maybe, and like, I understand it can be very nostalgic and rose tinted glasses, but that's the tournament that I grew up watching and, you know, staying at home from social things, like not going to the cinema with friends because I wanted to watch rugby matches. Like, that's how I felt about rugby at the time and the Heineken Cup. And I think, like, obviously, it went through a time of my teenage years as well, where that's what you remember of the rugby that you watched. So I understand that there's a little bit of a subjective view here as well. But, like, it just doesn't make sense to me that 2/3 of all teams would qualify into a knockout round. And then when I was writing that, I was kind of thinking about, why did they do it? And I know there was pressure from England and France and money and TV rights and all that kind of crack. But, you know, when you, and then as well, the other side of it is the domestic leagues are becoming more important, especially with the URC and South African teams coming into it. All of a sudden that becomes like as much of a pedigree to win that as nearly as it does to win the European Cup or the Champions Cup. So I understood, and I do understand a lot of what's happening. And, you know, the calendar is very dense, even though we see the URC taking weeks off at a time because of the Six Nations and everything like that. And that too. But when I broke it down, I was like, you get 4 games now. You don't get to play teams back to back. So you get 4 in the pool stages, and 2/3 of teams would be guaranteed a 5th game. So as opposed to 6 games, which are 3 home and away. And for, you know, the integrity of the competition that stands at the moment, 1 game for the sake of 1 weekend in the calendar, I just can't see that as being the best way forward. Now, I was thinking, I didn't want to say it out loud because I'm sure there's something I'm not thinking about here. I'll say it out loud, but I was kind of going, how do we get the home and away back? And if you go 8 pools of 3 and they all have to play each other home and away, and only the top team goes through, then you get a quarter final straight away. You get 4 games, so you actually, you help your calendar, your domestic league, and you get that home and away rivalry. So like, I don't see why that can't happen. Now, I think the only thing I was thinking is 8 pools, I'm sure the maths don't add up in terms of putting teams from not having the same team in the same league and all that in 8 different pools. It might get a bit logistically difficult there as well. But I just think the home and away, like I mentioned it about the AIL, you reverse your fixtures. You know, you play the front 9 and then you reverse them for the back 9. And you only get 1 of those kind of back-to-backs, obviously. But even like we played Garryowen and UCD, and after Christmas, we're going to play UCD and Garryowen. And there's a little bit of freshness about it. You know, there's a it's fresh in the mind of how you played them the last time, and there's a bit of revenge, or there's a bit of, you know, having to get the, and I think like what I spoke about in the old European Cup is that, you know, the rivalry is still fresh in your mind, and you have to go and you have to beat that team in terms of overall points because you want to top the pool. You have to top the pool. So, you know, getting 6 points versus 4 points because you get an away bonus point and a home winning bonus point, you get 6 points. They might only get four. There's loads of reasons why I just don't think it's the same thing. You know, I'm sure, I hope you agree, but it just doesn't seem to be landing the same way.
No, it's not. And Bernard, like, what have your thoughts been over these first couple of weeks? Or even like, I think the bigger issue is, even if you were to try and fix it, how do you actually go about it, and what do you do? Because the other question, obviously, is the South African teams as well, and like John Dobson, the Stormers coach, and John Plumtree were talking about, and Jake White actually as well, over the last few days, about how obviously they desperately want to be part of the competition because there's the makings of a wonderful competition here, and it has brilliant history. But with the way it's laid out at the moment, it's not serving anybody, because the South African teams are coming up here for 1 week and going back home. Similarly, the Irish, English, you know, Irish, English, Scottish, French, and Welsh teams are heading down there for a week at a time, and it's too short a time to be going down there. You're either coming up here to get a hammering or going down there to get a hammering, and nobody is getting what they should be getting out of it.
Yeah, it's a mess because, and even though the South Africans have obviously rotated and sent weaker teams away, they've also got beaten. Toulon beat the Stormers in Port Elizabeth. Northampton beat the Bulls at home. So, and realistically, you know, those two teams should be able to go toe to toe with Premiership sides. You would say so. It's very worrying. Look at it. I can see their point. I mean, what they arrived on Wednesday and back on Sunday, they're not flying business class. They're not sending, like you know, Plumtree said, I would love to send Siya Kolisi. And if you, the marketing around that game was around Siya Kolisi coming to Leicester Tiger. So the fans have been shortchanged as well. And look, injuries can happen, but this is actually purely trying to manage those players. It's very difficult for the box. I think they have to get 8 weeks rest in total. And obviously with the Rugby Championship, with November, with URC, with Champions Cup, it's very, very difficult for the coaches to try and manage that, and keep those players in the best possible condition for the long term. The South Africans have a place on the board, I believe, or they have a seat at the table in terms of where this competition goes this summer. And the future for them in this competition is really important. I look at lots of people say you could leave them out, we had a great competition without them, but I think they can add something to it. But we need, because realistically there's not enough quality teams in it at the, you know, there's and on their day the Sharks, the Stormers or the Bulls could be a contender for this if the season can be organized in a way that allows them play their best players in it. I think the only solution is, and this is going to be a difficult one, is that they try and the organisers allow them effectively come on tour, you know, where they maybe play two away games in Europe back to back, or even a neutral venue, like a home game away from home, if you know what I mean. So they rent a stoop or whatever, and they try and tap into the spore there, the diaspora there, and they can do that, and then maybe they back up a URC game on the end of it. So they play three games in a row, because I know being down there obviously a little bit and chatting to them, that's they actually don't mind coming up here for 3 or 4 3 weeks. You know, it's coming up for a week and then going back down and trying to play a game the other side of it. So there's a lot to organise, but at the moment it's damaging the brand, it's damaging the competition, and I don't want to be negative about it, but unfortunately, what we've seen over the first 2 weeks doesn't give you confidence that this competition is on the right track.
No, and like, obviously you mentioned the Springboks and the Rugby Championship, and I'd reckon as well we probably actually can't get anywhere on this argument until you sort out the international calendar, because that's just creating so many more problems as well for the URC as well, because obviously you have the South African internationals pretty much playing around the year and getting small little breaks here and there in maybe a couple of weeks at a time, where, you know, you probably do need to align both the Northern and Southern Hemisphere international calendars. Maybe you bring the North up in line with the Southern Hemisphere and essentially do an international season running from, whatever, June right through to November or something like that, and then you're into the club season where you could actually kind of get some clarity on the calendar, Johnny.
Yeah, I think it has been challenging because, Ireland having the Australia game as well. My understanding is Tyree Byrne wasn't allowed to start the Stade Français game, and he's the captain not starting a. Obviously, Stade put out a certain team, and Munster played very well, but like, it just seemed very strange. It was clearly not a selection. It was the captain. It was Evan O'Connell versus Tyree Byrne. I don't like, with the greatest respect, Evan O'Connell, he's a great player, but he's not starting ahead of Tyree Byrne at the moment, and I think it just showed that. Fact that he had to be rested, I know he probably played a lot of rugby. It just shows that the calendar doesn't even line up for Northern Hemisphere teams, never mind trying to get the two of them together, So there's always as well, I think like in autumn, we're trying to compare, how well New Zealand went and the stage of the season that they're at. And it is just a little bit frustrating that there has to be a kind of asterisk beside things. Even though Ireland have beaten them in that window recently, there's always going to be that little bit of an asterisk. They're tired at the end of the season or Ireland are only at the start of their season, like, and it would be great if we could line it up, because I think you'd get rid of that asterisk and you'd just be comparing like with like, and I think that's the way world rugby would have to go. Now I know like no one wants to give up their own tournament, like the Six Nations and the Rugby Championship are huge tournaments, so there's a lot of negotiations to go there. I don't think we're anywhere close to it, but it would be. I think there's too many external factors at the moment with the competitions.
Yeah, and it's probably not one we're going to solve here today, and I'm sure we'll probably be talking about a little bit more again in January. Let's move on to the matches, because one of the games that was decided by fewer than 10 points was Leinster and Claremont Auvergne at the Aviva Stadium on Saturday evening. Another win, Bernard, 9 in a row to start the season for Leinster, but this was a clunky overall performance, and I found it very interesting even just reading the reaction from the likes of Leo Cullen and players after the game. The language and the kind of tone of everything that was said, like, if you hadn't known the result just reading that, you might have actually thought they'd lost the game.
Yeah, I think they're very. I think they're very happy to attack the defence,
Yeah.
and their physicality and their effort. Obviously, I think their reaction after the game would have been, "Oh, our set piece, our line out, our scrum was fine, our line out really malfunctioned." And despite having plenty of ball off counter attack and turnover, they just never really clicked attack wise. Obviously, they had two tries in the first half, and they were. They were well executed, but in general, I thought their attack, it just doesn't seem to connect well. I mean, this week they actually made a load of ground up the middle of the field. I thought their interplay between their forwards was actually excellent. Yeah, the ball movement, and they were actually hurting Claremont through the middle of the field between the 15s at times, but then just couldn't turn that into another try, third try or fourth try. Which would frustrate them. And Claremont came with a blitz defence of their own. It wasn't as hardcore as Leinster's, but it put pressure on Leinster's decision makers. And Leinster struggled to make overlaps count, and hurt them down to 15s. And they will be frustrated. I think we've seen a pre-season where Leinster have now fully bought into Jacques' defensive system. But alongside that, there's a strategy around kicking. They're quite rigid and quite structured in how they manipulate areas of the field, and they don't overplay. And I thought they played that game like a kind of a cup final in terms of they weren't chasing bonus points as such. They were they managed the game to win it. And I think that's what you'll see with this Leinster team. Obviously, there'll be days where they can open up and score a lot of tries. But I think the way they play is going to get them. It's probably going to reduce the margin of win, if you get me, if that makes sense. But may equip them when it gets to knockout rugby to be used to being in situations where they're just controlling the arm wrestle, if that makes sense. I'm not saying they don't want to go out and get bonus points, but they
Yeah,
are quite
I get what you're saying, like that
methodical in their game. You know what I mean?
they're going to be become a little bit more content to kind of squeeze the opposition out, and I suppose slowly work their way up through the 80 minutes to win a game.
Yeah, even that penalty that Prendergast kicked to put Leinster from 12 to 15, and obviously they go two scores up. Like I've seen in the past in Europe where Leinster would just go to the corner there and get the third try, you know, and then obviously probably at the end maybe get the fourth try. But their, I think their mindset is, you know, very much cup rugby in Europe anyway. And even against Bristol, like, you know, they end up getting the bonus point, but it was little spurts of attack rather than all out attack. And now can they balance the two? That's the thing. I mean, as they get longer with Blindale, the problem now is that you're going to have obviously a change team this week. It's going to be hard to get any rhythm there. I'm not sure how many internationals come back for the next game, but then you know you got January will go quickly. Then you're into Six Nations. Then you come back Six Nations into knockout stages. So there probably isn't a lot of time for Leinster to get that balance right, because it is a different balance than they play with Ireland, in terms of that attack, defense, kicking game strategy.
Johnny, I've seen the theory offered that some of the clunkiness and errors in attack, like the, you know, the dropped balls and things like that, are it's kind of like a cause and effect where they probably don't have the legs on attack because they're putting so much effort and there's so much sprinting involved in what they're doing on defense now that by the time they kind of get the ball into their hands, they're kind of in conservation mode where they're trying to protect their energy levels so they don't have the same punch that they used to maybe on their multi-phase. What do you think of that theory?
Oh, I wouldn't buy into that. I think
Okay.
they're professional athletes. They're well able to play the game, and they've got enough subs. I think the game statistically has shown that, you know, scores in certain quarters are the margins are getting closer because fatigue is less of an issue, you know. So while I can see understand the logic of it, I don't think the statistics would back that up. And in my own experience of coaching, I find that when your defense is sparked and ready to go, attack just follows suit. You know, I think it can't happen the other way around as much, but I do think when a team is defensively in the right mindset, it shows that they're in the right mindset anyway. And teams love to spark an attack, you know. And Leinster aren't, well, I would say they're not any different, but they're absolutely a team to spark in transition. Like you see the Claremont near try where Prendergast dropped it, they nearly scored, and then they just sparked out of their own 22. Why can't, like, they've been defending there and it doesn't add up, you know? So no, I wouldn't buy into that. I understand there's probably been, and we would have said it at times like that, maybe training has been skewed towards defense. I also don't think that's true, like, you know, because if you actually manage, and I'd say that from an amateur coaching perspective, you don't overload any area of the game so much that you take away from others, never mind Jack Nienaber or Leo Cullen, someone, you know, who's so surely so good at organization that they don't do that, like, you know. Whether players' minds are just there and thinking about it and there's no control over planning, you can argue that, but I don't really buy it. Like, they're some of the best players in the world, Leinster's team. Like, you know, they can definitely play on both sides of the ball.
Yeah. No, and obviously
Just
then as
Neil,
go for
just on
it.
that, I don't think that Leinster's week is 80% defense, but there's certainly a vibe there and a push there, even amongst the players, to be better defensively. And Nina Barr has an unbelievable charisma, and he's been brought in there to fix the defense, to be honest. Like, you look back at the games they've lost, they haven't defended well. Their defense wasn't brilliant. They were much more attacking side. Also, and I know speaking to some players on this, they find it quite difficult to be in position to defend, to attack, or to burst into attack when you're so putting so much energy into how to defend. Whether that's through line speed or that's through counter rucking, and stay in the contest, they actually find it also difficult to reload on those transitions. So the example that you gave is a great example, Johnny, is the one away from their own line. That's a very unusual situation, where, I mean, most Claremont's forwards are 30, 40 meters up the field. Normally, when they get turnovers there in that area of the field, it's a different, the whole organization, both attack and defense, is different. And then you're into exit mode, which is fine. So they can absolutely attack, and they want to get better at it. But I think at the moment they're kind of very much leaning towards being a team who are rock solid defensively, and I think that's well embedded now. That's well embedded. Whatever was it, 8 games, 9 games, averaging I think 12 points now or 11 points in total we've conceded. And I think now you'll actually hopefully see them being able to get a little bit more joined up attack wise.
And obviously, it doesn't help when you only have just over 50% return on the line out. And that led to some really interesting comments yesterday from Jacques Nienaber, who was up doing Leinster Media. So I asked him the fairly simple question of, 9 out of 16 at the line outs on Saturday, even accounting for the most teams having like a bad day at the office, that's a kind of a wild number. And a lot of coaches in Ireland aren't going to give you the straight answer, and they'll kind of bluff that one away and say, "Ah, oh, we're working on a few things." And in fairness to Nienaber, he actually gave what I thought was a really, really interesting answer. And he highlighted how come January the 1st, there's going to be some new clamp down, a new kind of review on the time it takes to set up a line out, trying to speed up play, and line outs are going to have to be set within 30 seconds. And how Leinster were trying out something new yesterday that they've been working on over the last few weeks around their lineup setup, and in short, it didn't really work on the day. And he Nienaber and Razzy Erasmus, Johnny, like they've had this reputation always in South Africa as the kind of the mad scientists, the innovators, and they're always trying out something new. The Damian Valence calling a scrum off the mark in his own 22 obviously is the one that we all remember. But just like some of the what he had to say here, like obviously with anything you try out, there's going to be a couple of hiccups, and you could rightly see there were those hiccups. It's stuff we're going to have to iron out going forward. It's not just the speeding up. It's something that's going to become more and more relevant, not making huddles, and referees are going to be very strict on it from the 1st of January. It's something we feel we can grow within our game, that we can evolve and get better. I'd be really curious. I didn't get a chance last night, Bernard, like to actually look back at those Leinster lineouts and even kind of try spot what were they trying to do. Was there a different way of calling it? Were they trying to move a little bit quicker? And just what led to it? Now, as someone else pointed out, it could just be a very handy excuse for a coach to use when their lineup had a shocker at the weekend. But I'd be inclined to believe Nienaber that they were trying out something new.
Yeah, I have. I'm intrigued as well to look back. I haven't clipped. I just didn't look at how. I was looking at the content of the lineout rather than actually the process going into it. And it is interesting. Look at it, he's not lying. They definitely. I spoke to him and Leo during November, and they were all over what was happening in international rugby with the new interpretation of the escort, and they were talking about how the game is going to look in January, February. So the fact that they, were already predicting and maybe making plans to be ahead of the curve in this area doesn't surprise me. I hadn't picked it up in the game, what obviously what I'm trying to do is obviously have less no huddles, more tempo, go in with. A call and a cancel call and back their drill. It didn't look to be incredibly quick from my first viewing of it, but obviously I could be wrong there, so I'll have another look at it. But it could look if they have changed if they had changed their kind of focus this week and said we're gonna try to run that certainly could be a reason for two or three being lost, and just players not being used to it, not being comfortable. It's a very good line out D by Claremont as well, who blocked off, certain areas and were able to get up in front of Leinster. That could be a valid reason. I genuinely believe that they are trying to predict the shape of the game ahead of maybe the curve. And that could be a valid reason for some of the lost line outs. I still my core feeling is they're lacking a real line out general, someone who can keep everybody calm, can find
Like you
solutions.
mentioned earlier on the week, you
Maloney.
mentioned Ross Maloney. Like, yeah,
Yeah,
the.
Maloney did that role, and it was interesting. I was talking to Niall Annett, the hooker, Niall Annett, the hooker who plays for Bath, and he was saying that Maloney, he's very lucky there. They've got two, Charlie Ewells and Ross Maloney are both lineup gurus. And it's been a big part of, and Johan, in fairness, Van Graan loves the line out, and he obviously respects and appreciates a line out caller who's at the top of his game. So Ross was that in Leinster. Even when he wasn't playing for Leinster, his fingerprints would have been all over the Leinster line out menu. He's very, very good at understanding where space is and how to manipulate it. So it's just something that Leinster are gonna have to get better at, because obviously you won't win a European Cup on 50% lineup. And I think that they'll obviously can be better than that, but they'll want to be getting up a lot higher, you know.
It does make me really curious, Johnny, just to see what actually happens in January, because I like if Neen Aber is so hell bent on getting this kind of this new plan up and running by January, it would lead you to believe that someone has been in touch with him to say, do you know what, this isn't just going to be a new thing brought in January. They're going to actually be quite strict on it early on, like we saw in November with the kick escorts as well.
Yeah, just before we go into that, a small bit, I think it just goes back to the fact that they're trying a new lineout in a Champions Cup game against Clermont. Like, you know, it does not go back to what we just said at the start, that it kind of makes a mockery of some of the integrity of the competition. You know, like, if that's the game that you choose to do it in. And then the other thing, I thought that was already in play anyway. Like, as in, I know it's going to be focused on a bit more, but we were talking at AIL level, I think, last year, no huddles, no meetings, like, and because I remember saying no meeting before line. It's like, you know, and trying to put teams under pressure. But like, it's just funny that World Rugby sometimes puts a focus on something that should have been there regardless. Like this escort rule, you weren't allowed to escort. They just let it happen more and more and more until they had and sort it out. So the thing I would say about like Leinster lost their first line, and then it looked like it was kind of a dummy shooter at two, and then they stepped back at three. Birches it stepped back anyway around three into the middle of the line out, and it got cut out. That's their first lineup, but what I would think is difficult about that is the lineup caller in particular. You know, playing as a back, I probably had to learn that when you're asking things up forwards to go on the short side of a maul or whatever, that they're coming out of scrums and mauls and they're seeing stars. And then you're asking a lineup caller who's possibly, as Birch said, in the Leinster defensive setup, counter rucking for 4 and 5 seconds, he might be coming out of something very physical, and then you're telling him you have to win a ball in 30 seconds flat. And it could actually be the thought process to get to a simple call to get the ball out of the line out. And that's where it could be the call itself to put someone under pressure and not calling to the right spot. You know what I mean? So, like, I think it's a very interesting one. I do like the fact that you're going to have to get in and get it away. I don't know if I like the formal structure of 30 seconds flat, like, because you know, that it does put people under pressure when the game is played at a certain intensity. If you can just not allow huddles and speed them up and get to the line out and away you go, you know. But I do think it's probably a very hard skill. And as Bert said, someone who can go and, you know, process it very quickly, calmly get to the line out, give that kind of calm communication to everyone else, and give the hooker a lot of confidence into where he's throwing the ball. Because you see sometimes when the hooker is like kind of questioning it, there's not a full commitment on the throw. And it's a very interesting set piece. I'm not an expert on it, obviously, by any means, but there are just so many moving parts, even to the point where as you step up the levels, everyone at lower levels says, ah, the hooker, bad throw. But there's so much in terms of timing, the call, where the space is, etc. So it's definitely going to make it harder for the James Ryans of the world to get in and get away.
Certainly will. I do want to move on to Connacht, obviously, as well, because that's the opposition this weekend. And Bernard, I suppose, in analysing this game, you kind of do need to see what the Leinster team is before kind of really, really, really analysing what Connacht's chances are this weekend. The good thing for Pete Wilkins' side is that the last 2 weeks probably couldn't have gone any better for them. They got their two good wins in the Challenge Cup. They rested players. They rested in particular their Ireland internationals. I know Cian Prendergast played last weekend, but the others sat out the last 2 weekends. The guys who did come in and hadn't had a lot of game time this season came in the last 2 weeks and by and large held up their end of the bargain, put in some good performances, and now they're in a situation where they can put out two as close to first full strength teams as possible for these two Christmas derbies. And I would say probably more so targeting that game against Ulster next week.
Yeah, I think definitely. Look, Leinster are going to be much changed. My understanding is the majority of internationals are off. But look, they can still potentially play Barrett and Snyman and and Rabah and the Max Deegans, etc. So they're going to have lots of internationals, but their front line guys must be really good for Connacht, because they managed to get two bonus point wins, as you said, rotate players. And come up here and have a pretty much a free shot with, you know, looking to get something out of it, obviously. But even we've seen that Leinster rotated side are still pretty formidable. So it'll be a hard one for Connacht. But I think they definitely come here with a lot more self belief and feeling good about themselves compared to obviously Ulster, who have had two really tough weeks in Europe, and Richie will be trying to find positives, whereas Connacht have them, have them actually from the games.
Yeah, like I think Johnny, like if you're Pete Wilkins and you're probably looking at these two games as a as just its own block of two, and I think if they were to come out of this with five or maybe 6 points, you're absolutely probably delighted with that. Is this weekend, if they come away with 1 point, reasonable enough?
I can understand that, and
obviously, sorry, I'll kind of rephrase it. Obviously, it's not the. You're not going in with that mentality, but I think kind of if you're standing back from it in the cold light of day, it's probably a fair return.
No, I think you're right. I think like if the final whistle goes and they've lost to Leinster, I think they'll be very disappointed, even though that seems like a mad sentence. But when you regroup afterwards and think, oh, we got 6 points out of 10, like absolutely, I think that's it's a step forward for them. But if you're in their camp at the moment, you're thinking, you can't analyze them much because you don't know what they're going to put out. So you can't get too into the individuals of it. You obviously know how their system goes, and then you'll be kind of saying to your players, they're going to be changed. They won't have cohesion. Get after them at the start defensively. Get into their face and see what cohesion that they have in their attack, because at times they didn't have that anyway. So I think you would be going after them with a kind of an underdog siege mentality, I would think, but also filling them up in a way that. Look at what we've done in the last 2 weeks. They're hopping like, and we can go and turn them over. And if you get the first one, I think you get the second one. So that's why I'm saying, they'll have a high standard in terms of what they can get there. But Bernard's right. Like you can replace that Leinster team three times and they could be kind of potentially at this weekend, and that's not being disrespectful. That's just showing the strength and depth that they have. And when they get it right, we've always seen them just put the next player in. And Fintan Gunn is so impressive. Like, and he's played one of the last two games. He came on and had a dart through a ruck again at the weekend. Like fellas like that who are chomping at the bit for game time, and that's the reaction you might get out of Leinster. Fellas who believe they should be playing, and they're just up against some of the best players. But like having a Jordy Barrett potentially, I'm not sure what way his game time is and if he's allowed to play everything. I'm sure he's been managed behind the scenes as well, but. He's been so, so good. Understatement of the year, I know, but like he's just been so good. Like that try last weekend, I'm not sure Keenan crashes over the line there. Maybe he just takes a bounce on the outside, different strengths, but there's not too many fellas are finishing that. Like, so I think there's a lot of threat that Leinster will bring, and they won't be afraid of anyone else's threat. But I think Connacht can go with a bit of a siege mentality and try and turn them over, because they have done things like that in Interpros before, and I think they'll be trying the same thing.
Yeah, and like the final point on Connacht, but Bernard, before we move on to Munster and Ulster, it was something Pete Wilkins kind of pointed out yesterday, that like in terms of scoreboard when the sides met back in October, 33-12, I think it was, in Leinster's favour. But Connacht, as much as any other team this season, did ask a lot of questions of that defence, and it was probably more execution than anything else that kind of denied that game being any closer. And if I'm thinking back to it now, I remember speaking to Leo Cullen after that game in Galway a couple of months back, and that was in his mind their best performance of the season, to go there and beat Connacht with that scoreline. So if you are Pete Wilkins, you're looking at what happened back there and you're forgetting about the scoreline, because they did show that they were able to create some chances and get that ball into space. And if you can do that a couple more times against Leinster at the very least, there's something there to be got.
Yeah, no, and look, I don't know if Connacht have any choice. Like, I do think there's certain ways you should play against Leinster, the Lions, Claremont, and they got into a tighter game with them. The problem is, do Connacht have the attributes that the Lions or Claremont have? Not really. It's very difficult for them. Their team are set up to play a lot of ball movement, high tempo. And they have to do that. The challenge is obviously not exposing yourself. I mean, they did play well against Leinster, and they created some opportunities, but they only converted was it one of them for yeah they got 12 points. So they and Leinster, like when you review the game against Leinster, you will see lots of opportunities. That's just the nature of it. But what Leinster are backing is that they will test your skill set, and the skills have a breakdown, and that's what they build their game on. So have Connacht improved enough in the meantime? I'd say they definitely have, at least have had an experience of playing into that, and maybe can change a few things around. But if you remember that game, they just couldn't exit. Like, it was a very, very windy night, but it was their lack of a kicking game on the night was exposed massively. So they will have learned a lot from that. But yeah, it's still a big challenge. It's still a big challenge, and it's a big challenge for the Leinster team as well to keep that unbeaten record going, and put your hand up for selection for the week after, and obviously into Europe again.
Bernard, there's just an interesting thing here is that I actually find previewing teams along the Leinster kind of template, it seems easier. It's very clear in what you think you should be doing. But so there, the execution, because some teams like, and I know, look, this is preview at a different level, but like some teams have just a very standard strong defense, and it's the same way a lot of teams are going. And then you get a more aggressive defense, and you go, well, this should be clearer in our minds what we're trying to do. But the heat comes on, and the execution doesn't go, and you're scratching your head, being like, what do we do next? And that's the difficulty, Bernard, isn't it? Like you think you know what you should be doing, but it's just not coming off.
Yeah, and I think the problem is, Johnny, and I've spoken to some attack coaches who played against Leinster this year and at the tail end of last year, and the challenge for them is to give up on their philosophy that week. Do you know what I mean? So you're preaching, this is how we want to play. You're working on the skill set, you're working on understanding, and then sometimes they don't want to come in on a Monday and go, look, let's park the bus to a certain extent, or let's be a little bit more limited. And then, like, the South African teams, I think, they're so used to playing against a rush, because of what's been happening in South Africa over the last 4 or 5 years. They've already adapted to that, and then they feel they can beat it sometimes, with a certain quality of ball or a certain ruck position. And then other times they just say, no, we're not going to give them energy from trying to play into that. And obviously the Bulls have beaten Leinster twice. And they look at the Bulls have other strengths as well. But it is fascinating. And I look, maybe the tech coaches who stick to their guns, and maybe try running a few times, eventually they find the answer, and it's exposed, and everyone else has the plan then to try and beat them. But at the moment, I think if you're looking at that Leinster defence, regardless of who's playing, it does make you a little bit stressed if you're an attack coach.
To move it on, because we're running out of time, Munster take on Ulster in Belfast on Friday evening. Munster beaten 16-14 by Cast on Friday night. And Johnny, I think the context to the talk about this game is so important, because I think if in advance you had told Munster that they'd play reasonably well and come away with a losing bonus point in Cast, you'd say, okay, fair enough, no big deal. The issue with last week was considerably more about the performance than the result, I think, from a Munster point of view, where you look like it was flat, indisciplined, scrum got demolished, 30 minutes where the three separate yellow cards that they couldn't take advantage of, basic errors in handling and kicking, and then on top of it, all the stuff they couldn't control, like the injuries on top of it that just add the extra toll on the game. The only way that could have been worse on Friday night was if Cast had actually executed that late chance and denied Munster a losing bonus point whatsoever, which they looked a little bit close to doing. It was just such a frustrating night all around.
Yeah, is it the most played Champions Cup game
Yeah.
ever? And
19 of them.
there was that chat about the back-to-back game around Christmas time and the old format. And I think there's a lot of people thankful that it isn't going ahead to get that stalemate again. But it's funny, I was in and out of the game, and
I thought I know. Do you know what? Actually, sorry to interrupt. Like, it wasn't a very good game, but I actually really did enjoy it. It was a real old school arm wrestle kind of a game, even though it was low on quality, if you get me.
Yeah, it was tight as well, and I think it went in different kind of momentum shifts. And as I said, I was kind of in and out of it, and I saw the first quarter where Cass were just all over them, and you're thinking this is a horrible night. And I came back to it, and it was 10-7. And then as you see the game play out, Munster in with a shot at the end, and you're thinking, how has this happened? So I think that's the frustration, is that they were in with a shot of winning a game away with a rotated squad, although probably a stronger rotated squad. Away in France in the Champions Cup, there was it was there for them, and I think The tough part is you're going into an interpro of injuries. Like, aren't you the two squads going against each other? Like, that's what they got out of the game. I don't know what the story is with Craig Casey one. It's said as a meniscus injury, but I think there's a bit more in my head, you know, when studs get caught and everything else, you're kind of hoping it's not something more. And it's been very vague as to what he got the surgery for. But I'm sure if it was something bigger like an ACL, it would be a bit more time before you get it done and all the rest of it. So I hope that is it. And it's medium term as opposed to long term. But like, yeah, the injury toll, the lack of flow, the errors, the penalty count, missing the chance at the end to go and have a crack at it. You know, I think they'll be very frustrated coming out of there. And I think you're right. Like, there's loads of games where you go into it thinking, coaching anyway, you think if I can get this much out of it won't be a negative, or if I can get that much out of it, we'll have chances later on, and we can, you know, especially in those groups, you can try and have a cut off it. But you always reflect in a different way. And you know, we got out of jail against Gary Owen recently, and we finally got there, and in the end we could have gotten the bonus point, and we just got held up over the line. And you're saying to yourself, like, don't get greedy on wanting the bonus point because you were losing the game 4 minutes ago, you know. So it's a very funny kind of mindset after the fact where you think we could have won that and you're very disappointed. But you're right, I think they would have taken some points on the road and get out of Europe for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, like it's funny, but obviously, you know, Munster led that game for all of 2 minutes, and you're looking back on it thinking, how on earth did they lose it? The one thing, and I know hindsight is brilliant and all that, but even at the time when the team sheet came out, it felt like a bit of a gamble to be resting Gavin Coombs for that game. And I get the idea, obviously, if they wanted to rotate things around, get some minutes into Brian Leeson and just manage Gavin Coombs' minutes as well. But I honestly think, even with the benefit of hindsight, that game, like a Friday night game in Cast in France, that's the game that you want Gavin Coombs playing in. I feel like I would have been more inclined to actually rest him the week previous against Stade at home. I don't know how you feel on it.
No, absolutely. I was shocked that he was being rotated and rested. I think it was brilliant to see Gleeson, but even Gavin off the bench there, like in a game like that, you saw the influence that a Papali'i type had. It was always going to be a day for the heavy hitters, and he does give them go forward. And it was actually bad luck really for the coaches, because I don't think Munster have ever looked more lateral in a game as well. You know, the way it played out, Hodnett obviously gives them go forward, but it's just in general that the game was just crying out for that, because they had so much ball, they had so much ball, and they just couldn't dent, you know, at key moments or during opportunities, and they would have won that game. I think they win the game with Coombs playing. Honestly, I think that's the influence he could have had. So it's tough, you know. You've got a coaching staff who are kind of they're all contracted. Mossy obviously got a new contract as well, but it's not really sure how it's gonna play out in terms of restructuring for Munster, trying to keep the squad happy, trying to bring through young players. All those things are really important, but this is Champions Cup. This is Munster in the Champions Cup. This is, you know, a winnable away game in France, and like, you know, you come off a month off as well. I know Munster had a game against the All Blacks 15, but I would love to see him in the squad. I think it was an error in hindsight, but probably it was an error we probably could have predicted beforehand. You know, just I think he was ideal for that match.
Yeah, absolutely. And the
Question,
big
sorry,
go
can
for
I
Jack.
mention the Papali'i try? Am I missing something? Was that a try? Was there a hand under that?
I think there was a hand under it, and he also grounded it, if you know what I mean.
Bit of a wedge onto the side. It seemed
That's that's what I think anyway.
the momentum was all that way. They were going to score anyway, but I thought Abrahams did unbelievably well to get a hand somehow under that. And when you're looking at it slow down, you're like, is it a try? I'm not sure, but small margins away from home, aren't they?
Yeah, I think it was just the kind of ball angled over in the end, but like a serious effort to try stop him. On Craig Casey's injury though, like, to come back on it, just so disappointing for him because he was probably in the form of his career so far. He was like, I'd say Gibson Park would have started ahead of him in the Six Nations, but he was probably playing better currently than Gibson Park is at the moment as well. But it leads it to the next question then. When it comes to the Six Nations, if we're thinking it's going to be Gibson Park and Murray in the squad, who's the third scrum half in there? Because there are plenty of contenders out there, but you could make a case for quite a few of them. Doak, Ben Murphy, Matthew Devine, like three of them at Connacht nearly, Fintan Gunn, Cormac Foley, they were both in the emerging Ireland squad as well. It's a real challenge to someone over these next few weeks to just go out there and plant a flag in Simon Easterby's mind.
Yeah, it is, and I've seen Ben Murphy had a really good start to the year, and Matthew Devine has been talked about quite a bit there. But I suppose the one I've been most exposed to, and that's the reason why I'm answering the question this way. If you're looking at Fintan Gunn and what he's able to bring, the ceiling that he has, I'd hate to plant that flag for him because I don't have the knowledge on everyone inside out to be able to make it like an international coach. But he's the guy who I'd be very excited about. He seems to have a lot of attributes and spark and that typical. Like I wouldn't say he's the same as Craig Casey, but he's got energy that way as well. And he's got a small arrogance about him that I like as well. I just think he's typical scrum half and the style that we're looking for at the moment. But a lot of them are, by the way. Sorry, the Connacht lads are a similar vein as well, but I do like the look of Fintan Gunn. I think there's a lot going on about him.
Bernard.
No, I'm glad Johnny started it because I don't want to be seen as being Leinster and St. Michael's biased. St. Michael's biased, but no, he is. He's a. I've seen him since he was 15, playing. He has all the attributes to have a big impact.
Yeah, and I'm following on from you there, Bernard. I'm glad the Cork Con fella has recommended
Turn your.
Fintan Gunn, so I didn't have to be the one doing
Well, he's had some moments against us, so I saw.
it as
I am.
well. Yeah, so I got you.
On Ulster, like, I mean, speaking of injuries, Jesus, their game comes at a cost. They were a bit more vague on their squad update, so who knows? Some of these players could make it back for the weekend, but we'll have to wait until tomorrow afternoon to find out when the team is announced. But on that list of people who picked up knocks of some description, Ian Henderson, Cormac Isichuku, Nick Timoney, Werner Kock, Nathan Doak, Aidan Morgan, and then you also have Ben Carson and Stuart Moore, who were carrying knocks from the Toulouse game as well. How close are we going to be to like, how close is this going to be to an A interprovincial game on Friday night, Johnny? You'd worry for both of them.
They have an A interprovincial game as well, so that's the problem there, is that you're going to get an AL side and an A game. But what you just named out there is most the starting team for Ulster, so that's horrendous. And their squad isn't huge as well at the moment, so it's definitely going to be tough. But I think it's going to be tough for both sides. Obviously, I really like Jude Postlethwaite in the middle of the field. He played against us with Armagh. I'm sure I've said that on the podcast before, but he's just long and rangy. He had a lovely little break as well, again at the weekend. Putting two centres of that size into the middle of the field will cause anyone trouble. But yeah, I think it's a bit difficult for Richie, isn't it? Because I'm sure he'd have been seeing the Champions Cup against the teams that he was up against as a bit of a stretch, and get back into the URC, make a bit of a statement, get up the table. It's a big one against Munster because they're side by side in the table, aren't they? And that table is still settling. When you look through it, it's I'm used to looking at league tables and trying to see how they settle, but it's you see Leinster starting to get away a small bit, but the middle of that table is all 1 point increments to the next team. So like a win
Yeah,
against
like
Munster,
you're only just over a third of the way through it.
yeah. So it's still settling, but the games in the next couple of weeks will separate the league, I would think. So Richie, I'm sure, would have been looking at these. A home game against Munster, put them down another couple of points and separate yourself there. So it is very difficult for him to have that injury list, because I think their numbers are getting light now, aren't they?
Yeah, and Bernard, like, to look back at their game against Bordeaux the other day, like, when I think about what we were talking about in advance of it actually almost went exactly to script, where we were saying there are plenty of opportunities for Ulster to score and be dangerous against Bordeaux, but the problem is Bordeaux can hit you in a wave in a 15-minute spell, and ultimately that's exactly what happened. I was at a wedding on Saturday. And I was checking my phone. I think it was just up around dinner or something like that. And I look in, and Ulster are, what was it, like 19-14 ahead, early enough stages of the second half. I check my phone about half an hour later, and they've lost 40 points to four, or 40 points to 19. And it's only then yesterday when I was watching it back where you're trying to figure out how on earth did that happen?
Fatigue just ran out of juice. That I was actually Richie got a response from Ulster. They put some nice stuff together that first 50, 55 minutes and were competitive, but at the end, you would have, if that game had another 5, 10 minutes, it would have been even more. I mean, Bordeaux were just able to stay at the same level or even with the impact off the bench, increase their power and their speed. And Ulster were just, they looked punch drunk. You know, it was massive. And it's not, look, it's a factor in the game. Sam Larner, who's a data guy on Twitter, he's just, yeah, last night he put out stuff around the game and the scoring trends, and it's the second and fourth quarter because of fatigue, is when teams are breaking. But like, I think that was it. Ulster just haven't had to work so hard to stay competitive against a bigger, more powerful team. Once that energy level dropped a little bit, they were just exposed. And Bordeaux are genuine contenders just because of how quickly they can score. You know, their firepower is crazy. They're far from perfect. You would say Toulouse are a more well-balanced side, and obviously the top 14 final, Bordeaux got exposed in that. But I think Bordeaux on their day can beat anybody, because they just have so many brilliant attacking players, and they've got some size up front. They've got a good line out, yeah, they're definitely exciting team to watch. And imagine Noel McNamara. I mean, Johnny, how jealous are you seeing the quality of players he has to work with? I mean, it's phenomenal. He's doing a great job with them as well.
Actually, you'd be jealous of him and Joey Carberry when you see the little ear to the crowd, and that Ulster crowd can get on top of players, all right. But you know, when I'm looking at him struggling in Munster, Jack Crowley leapfrogging him a bit in the Irish setup, translating into his provincial setup, his injury worries. I know he's had a few over there as well, but looking at him in that back line, like what a back line! Like what you just tell them. I remember talking to Casey Lolala around his Canterbury days, his Crusaders days, and he said that it didn't really have any cause because they had the IQ to just do something that they decided on the day, like, you know. And that Bordeaux team seemed like they'd have a similar crack, you know. The there was one clip behind the post, like, of their attack coming towards the camera, and it's just phenomenal, like the handling, the ability, the change of direction, the balance running. Like Noel McNamara is definitely enjoying his time there. It's a
Yeah, it would take a decent offer to tempt him home, I'd imagine, given what he's working with over there. The final point then, just on this game this Friday, factoring in all the injuries and the fact that both of those teams have lost and have had patchy enough starts to the season, like, I think when you combine all of those together, Bernard, that's actually what's making me really, really look forward to this game on Friday, because whichever team wins on Friday evening in Belfast, that's going to feel like a massive win for
Yeah, this is
whichever
huge.
team wins.
Yeah, this is absolutely huge. And you would say Munster have a better chance because at least they have the Stade Français and Lions wins, you know. And Cast are very much in the game. The challenge for Ulster and Richie is obviously they're on the back of four losses now. And the Toulouse game was pretty harrowing. The way the game against Bordeaux finished, even though there was obviously elements of the performance he would take confidence from, was tough. So Munster, you would imagine, going up there in a better place mentally. But I think Richie, to be fair to him, will be able to get a bounce out of Ulster as well. And this game should be really tight. But whoever wins it has a little bit of momentum going into the week after, and obviously. Whoever loses it then is the pressure's on, you know. If Munster were to lose, you know, they obviously had a poor start to the URC. That last month where it looked like things were changing would disappear pretty quickly, and the pressure beyond them. And Ulster obviously having lost to the Lions, and sorry, having lost to Cardiff, Leinster, and then Munster in the URC, are just chasing their tail a little bit. But I just got a message there from someone. John Klein had an operation. John Klein had an operation. So yeah, he's now long-term injured, you would say. So Munster, likewise, their injuries, they're just adding up and getting no break at all.
Absolutely not. Well, really looking forward to that game. That is Friday evening. Leinster and Connacht, meanwhile, on Saturday at 5 o'clock. Coverage gets underway on RT2 and RT Player. You can follow a live blog as well on rt.ie/sport. And there's commentary of both games across RT radio platforms. Bernard and Johnny, thanks a million. And in advance, have a happy Christmas. This is our last podcast before Christmas. We will speak to you on the other side. Best wishes to you and yours. And hopefully enjoy the rugby over the next couple of weeks.
Thanks, Neil. Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.